if we're all quiet and we don't talk about it. And this even goes for some of our mistakes. You know, we have to own it. Let's be transparent. And as long as we're transparent and the message is real, then we're going to be on top. But we have to give ourselves a chance to be there.
Welcome back to the Midwifery Wisdom Podcast. This week, Augustine is joined by two techie midwives, Charlotte Bright and Elke Millicent. Together, they talk about where tech is going for healthcare and for midwives specifically, how it's made an impact on the profession. They dive into privacy laws for data, client safety, midwifery safety, personal safety, and what they hope to see coming down the pipeline to aid midwives in their work. Augustine makes a special call to midwives to become active on social media, to talk boldly about birth, get the message out there, and to take advantage of these tech resources that we're given. Let's dive in.
So welcome back to the Midwifery Wisdom Podcast. I am your host, Augustine, and I'm so excited to have two guests with us. Let's start with Charlotte first, and then we'll move to Elke. Charlotte, will you tell us who you are, where you are, and what you do?
Sure. My name is Charlotte Bright. I'm a licensed midwife here in California in the Silicon Valley area. So I'm kind of new to midwifery. I started that career about 5 years ago, but before that, I spent about 18 years in tech. And straight out of college, I went into IT. And in the last 5 years of my career, I was in InfoSec, so information security. And I dealt a lot with the new upcoming, you know, cybersecurity and all of the fun bits of technology. And I retired into the midwifery.
That's an epic transition. I want to hear more about that. But first, let's hear from Elke. Elke, hi.
Hi. So I'm Elsie Barnes. I've been in maternal child health for about 20 years, but midwife for 12. And I, as far as the tech world, it's mostly just kind of who I am. I'm always looking for an easier, better, higher tech way of doing things. And I get really frustrated when things are, you know, so many things in our world, people are still stuck in the 1970s or the 1980s. And I don't know, I just find there's often a better way. And I think this could really help midwifery move forward if we really jump on the tech bandwagon.
I couldn't agree more. And I'm kind of obsessed with what's next and what's coming for midwifery, for medicine, for healthcare in general. And so just as an introduction to our listeners, before we jump into this content, everyone knows that the pace of technological advancement has been accelerating at an exponential rate. And so what that means is, like, we used to consider things progressive if they were linear. So, you know, 1 + 1 = 2 + 1 = 3 + 1 = 4. But now exponential is 1 + 1 = 2, and then +2 = 4 + 4 = 8. And so we have that sort of logarithmic tracing that just goes up and up and up. And we are in those advanced numbers. So, you know, computers and tech and AI started, and we saw slow progress in the beginning, and now it is expanding. And it's no surprise, really, that AI is a major contender to transform many aspects of patient care, operational efficiency in running offices. And of course, it doesn't even just apply to technology. It's going to change people and health. And there's a lot of proposals that it will dramatically improve the quality of life. There's this convergence between AI and healthcare that really might make it more efficient, might make it more personal, ultimately kind of more human. For business owners operating health-related products and services, this could lead to some really exciting solutions that directly improve patient care and operational efficiency of teams. And so we've seen this really take off in the healthcare industry, specifically in medicine, where diagnostic support, data management, patient care optimization, a real shift in daily operations. And so what we'd love to do today is with these two guests, one of who comes from a history of tech, and one who has an internal passion and drive to understand tech. She just did a really great presentation in our membership group, Midwifery Wisdom Home Base, about tech usage for midwives. And I would just love to say, let's start way in the future. What is coming for midwifery? Like, what do you think? And we can even zoom out of midwifery and just talk about healthcare in general. Where are we headed? And I'd love to have both of yours kind of like predictions or like bouncing off of each other. I think we're headed towards a lot more automation. I just saw a TikTok about a patient who is talking to a camera because she has a virtual nurse taking care of her that day. I think that's coming. What else is coming? What do you guys think? What's coming down the road for us?
What I see, like everything that you're saying was great, but I have to say the amount of anxiety that came up for me listening to people talk about take, let me have all the technology. I'm like, oh my gosh, let me backpedal.
Yeah, well, I definitely wanted to get into the risks for sure and the downsides, but let's do that secondarily. Even if you don't agree with it, even if you don't want it, even if you won't personally be participating, where are we headed?
On that ride. I love technology. Where I think it is going to be amazing is kind of like if we take a look at it as crowdsourcing. We're not even going to be using human brains. We're going to be using supercomputers. We're going to be using everybody's data. And we're going to be using a compilation of the world because we have all of these threads that interconnect us. And then that is compiled and given us some outcomes instead of us just looking at like, oh, this is United States based research. We have the world's based research. And so maybe we're going to start to see different outcomes, but it all just depends on who's driving that model.
Ooh, that's a very important way to wrap up. Okay, where are we going? What do you see coming down the line?
Well, I mean, I'm not so grandiose as far as what I think we need. And I'm also a little pessimistic because I've watched how slow hospital systems are to change or just how low tech they are. Like I did this NRP at a hospital and then they're like, T-piece, they're like, well, it doesn't attach to this one or the one in the OR, but it attaches to that one. And I'm like, well, how do you get it on? They're like, well, if you shove it really hard, it might fit. You know, how all the machinery in the L&D room, it's all different. And every hospital is different. And on different floors, it's different. And then some places, the off button is red. And some it's on the top. And then some you have to twist. Just like, it is such a shit show at the hospital right now. I just can't even imagine them jumping into quantum, you know, AI, crowdsourcing, improved, blah, 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 when they can't even like get machines that work with each other. So I'm pretty pessimistic about them, but I think where the future, where it is moving rapidly is in the private sector. And it's the same thing, like what's going on with like hormone testing. It's like this, the most advanced hormone testing is not at Quest and it's not at your doctor's office. It's these, you know, private labs and these private startups that's where you're going to get the best care and the highest technology and these small, agile, mobile kind of businesses are the ones who are going to be able to uptake it. So I'm pretty pessimistic about the whole medical system as a whole take on anything. But I think that's where we have advantages as midwives that are independent practitioners because we can uptake technology really quickly. Like,
because it's a single decision maker, right? It's just the practice owner being like, let's go this way.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also just within us too, we're all agile and we're all have high need. And there aren't a bunch of like middlemen or, you know, like, you know, if you have a contract with Philips and then someone else comes out with a better, you know, like the butterfly comes out, well, you're not going to buy the butterfly because you have to be friendly with the Philips guy and you have to wait for the new Philips thing to come out. And so we don't have to do that since we're not tied down with politics and middlemen and, you know, acquisition departments and all that stuff and board of directors and conflicting interests, we can just do it. So I think that's how we are actually able to, we're going to make some, yeah. We're more positioned. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was going to say, if we're talking about healthcare in general, as a global consumer, as a global citizen, I can't even describe to you the benefits of exporting your healthcare. Now, obviously, big disclaimer, this is a privileged act that people do, but there are medical tourism is just exploding around the world for Americans and other for-profit medical zones that are controlled pharmaceutically and insurance controlled. And not just Mexico, but like Bangkok and Thailand and,
Turkey.
Singapore and Turkey, and like, it is exploding all over the world. I know there's major fertility clinics in the Caribbean that are helping Americans and so on and so forth. And so I think that kind of new players on the global stage of capitalism are going to be the big innovators. They're going to be the big game changers. Like you said, these private, small, nimble organizations that are like startups trying to, jump into capitalism. I think you're right. And I love what you brought to the group meeting online this month and or last month. And I love what you're saying now. It's like, why can't midwives be a part of this? Why can't we capitalize on this process of being not only adopters, early adopters, but maybe some of the innovators too? So I'd love to kind of take that and now jump into what is currently available. What are midwives using? We know that there is some AI integration in Mobile Midwife now. We know that some midwives are using Freed to chart. There's a pretty much wholesale adoption, at least by many, with ChatGPT for generating various content within the business. What do you guys see? What are people using right now?
I see a lot of chat. I see a lot of just kind of utilizing that for either content creation, like you said, or in a line like, how do I write this document that I may not know how to do for this and this thing? And it, kicks out something that's kind of agreeable.
Yeah. It's a start.
It's a start. Yeah. It's like mm-hmm. an inspiration, the muse. And I think like there's definitely place and time for it, but you always got to fact check it.
Yeah.
Because, it's like a midwife, and I haven't actually looked into the AI portion of a mobile midwife, but everything about any type of machine learning, it's going to be what is the data model. And with Mobile Midwife, there's something that from a security standpoint I look at is, one, what did they tell you is happening with your data? And then what does your contract say? Because those two things are very different. You can have a banner on a website that says, we hold all your data. But if you look at their contract that you're signing, it might not actually have that language and it doesn't make that promise. And they're only held to what is on that signature line.
Okay, so now we're into the nitty gritty. This is where it gets rubber meets the road, right? So talk to us about you like 15-year career in data safety. Talk to us about really what is the risk? What do we need to pay attention to? What are the unknowns? Like you were just describing that sometimes they own all your data. Keep going. What else is there?
Well, there's sometimes they own all your data. That's the big thing is we never know who holds it. We never know what model mm-hmm. it. Where that data originally came from, because as much as we like to use AI, it's really not artificial intelligence, it's machine learning, it's data that we put in, and it is always created by humans. All the data that is in an AI model is created by somebody. And is that right. data biased? Does that data have a full spectrum of
information? Definitely. It 100% does. And the bias has been established, especially for ChatGPT, who was developed by, Bay Area liberals that right. like, has their language, right? So yeah, that's a big part of it. We've not hit singularity yet, which is when we haven't actually, what's the phrasing you would use, Charlotte, where we have truly sentient.
We don't have unbiased protection of data. We don't even have privacy laws in place. I mean, California does. And there's only, I think, like 15 states in the United States that has privacy protection acts. And I think what a lot of people don't understand is when Roe versus Wade came down and was overturned, HIPAA, that was the case law for HIPAA. So HIPAA isn't even like backed up anymore. So what is controlling and what is protecting our data is actually our state's data protection acts. And we have states that don't have that. So if you have, say, a patient or a client that you're putting their data in, and you're in, like, say, one of the states that doesn't have that, but they're in California, their Privacy Act follows them. And you might not be aware of that. And if you're not aware of what that person's individual address and their privacy, just like Europe, in the EU, they all have the, what is it, like the GDPA or something like that. They all have that. That follows them. So when they come over here, we have to protect their data to their homeland's expectation. And if we don't know that, we're putting all of this client data into a model that we don't even know how it's protected, if it's sold. I mean, I think about every time I do an NIPT test, where does this go? Like, who's holding this? Do you sell this? And that's the big question, is we have to know as healthcare providers, what we put into a model, where does that data go? Because we could be violating somebody's privacy.
Oh, that's so fascinating. Well, it's so fascinating, and also somewhatly morbidly like reassuring that like the state by state bullshit that exists in midwifery is the case in other problem areas. I kind of love that. I mean, I don't love it. It's horrible. This is the real downside to the state independence and the state authority that exists in the United States. But it's also becoming increasingly more problematic and even like outdated as we become more and more globalized, right? What are there any, do you know of, I mean, I know you're out of the industry now, but do you know of any movements in that direction to get a federal law?
I think last I heard on it, Biden was trying to work on some form of federal Privacy Protection Act, kind of like how the EU has. But I think because each state is in itself trying to enact and put in place their own guidelines, they are just following along that line. I think it's going to happen faster with states than it is at a federal level.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, as I was saying, we have not met singularity yet where we have truly autonomous, independent intelligence. We are still in this machine learning. And I think that's a really important distinction that you made, Charlotte. Elgi, with this machine learning, we are starting to see these different small startups popping up who will listen while you're talking throughout your whole visit and then create a chart from that. What's your take on this? I know midwives are using it already.
I think it's brilliant, but other than that, I mean, it's such a waste of time and also mental energy to try to translate what has transpired and then put it into words. And that's mental space that we're not spending and not being, connected. And I think it's brilliant to not have to be keyboarding or writing, and you can actually have conversations and have hands on people, and you could actually do body work while you do your whole visit because you're not having to tick, 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 tick. But also, I mean, if you're worried about, you know, privacy and machine learning and all this stuff, I mean, I've always thought, why not just like cops have a body cam? Like, why don't we just record everything? Because data storage is so cheap now, and all the time and effort that we spend to consulted or, you know, educated on the risks and benefits, you know, all the cover your ass language that we have to come up with, they could just, if it ever came to be a problem, we could just go to that visit and play it and say, here's the 15 minutes that I talked to her about GBS. And there it is. And so we wouldn't have to worry about translating what happened into a chart that would be defensible in court if we just had basically body cams.
That brings up so many things.
And then that could just be transcribed. It wouldn't have to be machine learning put into SOAP notes and whatever. It could just be straight up transcription and then stored.
Fascinating. Whew, we are delving into the future now. What are the potential? I mean, there's so many levels here, and I'm sure there are much smarter people than me thinking about this on the national level. But when we apply it to the midwifery scene, from a record of what happened, from defensive documentation, from the easing up the provider's burden, and from factual evidence, this makes a lot of sense. But from privacy, it doesn't. And so, Charlotte, take us into the other side. With cops, they are presumably in a public space.
Right.
We are not. So help us unpack this.
There's one thing that, you know, we always think, what can I put in paper? What can I put down so that it protects me? And the one thing that I always think when I start any meeting is, let me tell you what I have control of and what I don't. And the only way that you can be fully transparent with our clients and our patients is to basically say, hey, I'm putting your information into this. This is my charting software. This is supposedly HIPAA compliant. And this is to the best of my knowledge. If I don't do the due diligence of looking to see if they're compliant, like if I didn't look in that contract and I didn't do that, it falls on me. So if they have a data breach in California, I'll just say California Privacy Protection Act is expensive. Breaches are expensive. It is basically $750 for every client that's exposed. And then you have to tell them. It's not on my charting software. It's me. And so, you know, when we take these, when we take anybody's information and we store it somewhere, so say that we were to videotape this meeting and we were to take that, put that on that cheap storage. If that storage isn't protected, file vaulted, if it's not encrypted and it doesn't have two-factor authentication or whatever they believe, you know, the, what is it, like we're doing our due diligence or our best case scenario, then we're at fault when that data breaches and they're coming after you. And it's just kind of that thing where I think about, is this another area? And in California, we have the medical board. And I'm like, is this just another area the medical board is going to come after the small group of midwives because we don't know how to protect our data? It's very easy to take somebody and financially ruin them with a single
thing. Well, and it's been happening. I mean, how many messages do you get from your bank and your whatever? Like, it's happening all the time, actually. Data mining and data breaches is like why there is such a massive cybersecurity industry now in the first place, is because hackers are incredibly effective at getting past these firewalls and authentications and what have you. So yeah, there's part of us that could just look at all this and be like, I'm going back to paper charting.
Well, but then also, you got to be realistic. I mean, are we going to be targeted? Who's getting targeted? Financial information is getting targeted. Videos, like, are videos targeted? I don't know.
Probably not. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't know the solution.
Yeah. And the other thing that, I mean, privacy really has, that left the barn. Like, the barn door is open. It's gone. You know, Snowden tried to warn us. We blew him off. And then now everybody knows everything. I don't know if you saw recently about how they figured out, like, they followed all the phones of all the people that went to Epstein's Island. So they have now these details. And then once that came out, they're like, wait a second, how'd that get info? And so they can see the flight pattern of the person that went there and then went back to their residence just by the location of their phone. It's like everybody knows everything. Yeah. But
well,
I do
not
understand.
Everybody, but corporations know everything.
Well, I mean, the people that have money and resources can find out anything about us, which is totally terrifying and depressing. But just keeping that in perspective, that really privacy is kind of the horse that's out of the barn right now.
Yeah. And I think it's our responsibility to just say that to our clients. You know, I'm going to do my darndest best to make sure that everything that we have in my power is, you know, protected, but I can't guarantee it. And, you know, it's with everything, with LabCorp, with our blood tests, with everything, any physical sample that leaves their office, we have a generalized expectation that it's going to be secure, but we have no guarantee. And that's what I tell my clients, you know, their newborn screening. This is the number that you call to destroy your sample. Will they do it? No idea. But
yeah, well, and that's interesting because I remember whatever 20, 15 years ago, people were really upset about and were declining the newborn screen because they're like, they're going to save my baby's DNA. And I was thinking that they were paranoid. And sure enough, I think it was California that was banking all of the DNA of all the babies.
Yep. There's a few other states too. Well, so what's a poor midwife to do, right? Well, we've been in the focus of like the client's safety protection. Let's shift to the midwife now. Elke started in on this. Like, it would be fantastic to actually be a midwife and not be a transcriptionist, right? Like, that would be amazing. What do you wish exists or do you hope is coming down the line to help midwives from a technology perspective?
Okay, I'll tell you what I want.
Okay,
so I've seen this machine out that does you like paints toenails and does manicures. You know, I want a thing that you put on someone's AC and inserts the IV catheter.
Yes.
Oh. So, yeah. And you know, with that has you know, either ultrasound, you know, it's ultrasound guided, robotic IV catheter insertion.
That's awesome.
Because that's like one of the things where you always need another person, and that person can that person do that, and when they miss, and it's the cause of so much trauma and so much stress on everybody, and so that's one of many things, but that I think would be great.
That seems very possible. That's probably coming. That I have, you know, I work part-time part of the year in India, and a couple years ago, last year, I don't remember, I had a client whose PhD was on researching, and she never went out of the creation part, but researching and creating a tool that checks dilation.
Oh, no way.
And then she got pregnant and decided that after her first exam by a provider, her invention was a really great idea. And then someone told her about midwifery and she ended up with us. And then she had an exam with midwives and she was like, oh, yeah, I don't think a tool is such a good idea. So she never went on and finished creating because like she got in her own body what it feels like to be treated like a human by a human and, you know, touch kindly and with respect and consent and all these things. And so I think there's a huge part of midwifery that this is going to be true, that it actually can never be replaced. But I love this concept that we could have these ancillary supportive tools, techniques, and software in order to help us actually do the job of midwifery instead of the bookkeeping and the billing and the charting and the IVing, nursing, and all those other pieces. What do you hope exists and gets created, Charlotte?
I really like integration. I like one tool that does many things, and I understand that that's really hard from a security standpoint because there's so many open doors once you start integrating. But I would love like lab smarts to connect to client care. That would be amazing instead of me and all these functional values. And then I would
do you like lab smarts? I've heard about good things out there. You do.
I love them. Cool.
It's another podcast for another day.
The other thing is I loved the technology, the mindset that I don't know if she's a fake inventor or dreamer. I'm going to call her a dreamer. The one that they made the Netflix documentary on, the very small amount of blood work that was taken that did all.
Oh, yeah. And then she ran away with their money, but was a money.
But I was like, I want that machine. I want that machine at every grocery store. I think that, you know, our health should be accessible to everybody and you shouldn't have to go in and get a blood draw from lab
or have $1 million to have it evaluated.
I'm like, please just save Mart, you know, walk in the grocery store, get your blood tested, great, I'm good. Like, to print it out so that way it's not emailed, that way you don't you're HIPAA compliant, and then you just play with it, and you know, it's like, bring that to your doctor and hey, I decided to get my vitamin D, my B12. I decided to get my ferritin checked. Like, you know, you didn't have to have somebody that's like, oh, I'm sorry, your insurance doesn't pay for vitamin D. Like, no, I want my blood work done when I want it.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So that's my dream machine.
I love it. I love it. Well, I think there's going to be lots of people who are listening to this who are like, no way, not at all. Not for me. I'm not, no, that's a no for me. I paper chart. I don't want the government listening to anything I'm saying. I don't want to have to think about privacy. What is a cloud? You know, like this is what I imagine people are listening or thinking. So I would love for each of you, and I'm going to as well, share a tool that you already are using that's changing your life that comes from technology. Maybe not AI specifically, but that's coming from a technological advancement. What are you already using?
I use research, and it
Research.
comes from the internet, and it comes from, the biggest piece of technology that we have in the past, 25 years. And the fact that I can pull up information from Europe, from India, from the United States, and I can combine that, I use research. And, just to me, that's the biggest piece of technology I use.
That's awesome. Okay.
Do I do only one?
Say several. Go for
I
it.
use
Say
the
several.
internet. I mean, that's like
The
so.
internet. Yeah. I mean, that's enough right
The
there. That
internet's
we
no, the
didn't use
internet's
to have
amazing, but I have a lot of things. Well, one thing I absolutely just was a game changer to me was the handheld portable ultrasound, which I know a lot of people have not taken that on, but I just find it absolutely amazing. And I don't know, I mean, I don't know a single midwife that's been in practice for, a good amount of time that has not missed a breach, And so it's, I don't know. And then how many times have you want to know kind of what the position the baby is, and the mom is has a highly sensitive belly and does not want a vaginal exam, and
or is a
just being
high
able.
BMI, or is
Right.
sexual history of trauma. Like, there's lots of
Exactly.
reasons. Yeah.
Exactly. And in 15 seconds, you can get a really good picture. And so that's really valuable. I think that's something that's underutilized. CGMs, continuous glucose monitors, I think are miraculous. And I'm not saying to use them clinically to control GDM, but just even for ourselves, as help these health metrics that actually show you exactly what's going on. Because, for example, like when you, like sometimes people who don't want to do the glucose tolerance test, and we have them do the food diary, and then we have them do, well, even the glucose tolerance test, those two data points that you get, or one, depending on what test you're doing, there's no way to know that you're hitting the peak. And I've spent a lot of time with a CGM on myself, and I almost never, my peak is almost never at 1 hour and 2 hour. It's almost always at 1 hour and a half, and it's significantly higher than the 1 hour and 2 hour reading. So even if people just try it for yourself for a couple of weeks, or having, because they last depending on which one you buy, the 1 or 2 weeks. And the moms too, they have no idea like what amazing information you can get from it. That's life-saving. It's gonna make a huge difference in the outcome for the baby, and then also your personal health. Like, it's, and you can try to do everything right, but you don't really know if you're doing things right. It's like there was this, I went to this boba tea place with my daughter. I got a sugar-free tea, and it wasn't sweetened. It was unsweetened, an unsweetened boba. But it actually didn't have boba in it. It didn't have the like things in it, but it was like a tea. It was like a Thai tea, basically, but unsweetened. Did not taste sweet, but my blood sugar skyrocketed to almost diabetic levels. Like, what if your pregnant mom is like, oh, I got to cut back in sugar. I'm going to have the unsweetened tea. They have no idea. We have no idea. There's so many additives and, crap in our food. So that's another one. That's two. And then the other third thing, I guess, oh gosh, I could kind of go down the rabbit hole on this, but just
Go
personal
for it.
data. Personal data trackers, like personal health trackers. A lot of people have the Apple Watch and, the Garmin and the Fitbit and stuff, but I just think those are really useful because you tell a mom, hey, so are you walking? Oh yeah, I'm walking. In the old days, the mom, I had this one mom that I found out later that she literally walked 2 blocks to the park and then 2 blocks back. And that was her, I'm walking. And so if you have data, and if you can set it up to share, like how they have, you have your little Fitbit buddies or whatever, so they have accountability, or encourage them to have accountability with others and give them like, distance goals or something like that. you know, and this is not super high tech AI. This is completely accessible tools that we can use, I think, to improve our outcomes.
Love those recommendations and those examples. I really want to give, I guess, two examples today. And like you said, we could probably go on for the whole podcast with this because there are so many cool gadgets and things coming out. But I want to just say, you know, there were a lot of poor outcomes before Doppler technology existed. And so, like, when we watch Call the Midwife and they have a Pinard that they listen once or twice in labor and then they catch a stillbirth, that is an example of how technology has actually made everyone's lives better, because we can, with a handheld, relatively inexpensive device, we can catch babies who need extra help, even if they didn't have high risk issues before labor. And to me, if you know, guys, if you take workshops from me, I talk about, you know, fetal heart tone monitoring being one of the absolute core strengths and necessities of a community-based midwife. And I think this is a piece of technology that we should all use. When she's not in pain and their uterus is not tight, we can certainly listen with any listening device, the toilet paper roll in pregnancy at the end. But in labor, we can't do it as best without the technology. And it has been pretty much wholesale adoption with almost no risk factors and a tremendous benefit and gain for everyone. So for anyone really, I'm not into technology, I bet you have a Doppler. So you are into technology. You're just a late adopter. And I think what this conversation is helping us to remember is that we could be early adopters. So I'm just going to share a little bit from my founder's speech at last year's conference, and we'll link to it here in the video so you can click it and watch the whole thing. But the rise of the influencer is here to stay. This new currency is the most democratic and compelling currency there has ever been. It leveraging an audience is not easy. It requires transparency and honesty and integrity and compassion, all while delivering exceptional value. But it is incredibly effective. Social media, despite all its flaws, has finally created a level playing field and given people power. Anyone, anywhere can create an audience and leverage that audience to help them know whatever it is that you're sharing. And so I would say this is the piece of technology that I currently am sort of beating the war drum about, is to help midwives accept their role. They need to be public. You know that old saying, the revolution will be televised, right? Like, it's now going to be on TikTok unless the US government shuts it down, and then whatever, we'll do Instagram. But, you know, we're going to need to be the face of the resistance. We need to stand up, speak loudly, and help people understand the choices that are being made for them versus the choices that you know, are being hidden from them, and really reintroducing empowerment, choice, autonomy, sovereignty, and all of those ideals that we really lean into. So that to me is the immediate current technology that you can adopt. Get on lives, put your face in front of the camera, and tell people about what you know. 20, 30, 50 second videos, they actually are trending. Like, you don't, this is not hours. You don't have to craft content. You can literally just talk and say, hey, y'all, I just met with this person. She had this question. Here's my answer. Or I saw this happen 5 times in the last week, and I want to tell you, instead of you having to Google this, here's the truth. I love that kind of content. People love that content. They share it readily. The system is made up for you to be an influencer, an expert. So that's the piece of technology that I'm currently in love with for midwives specifically. Use all the platforms.
You get your story platform and use negative narratives from other people to positive them.
Ooh, tell us more. Explain
this. I've seen as, so with, I don't know if you guys remember Clearview, they came through and they scraped a whole bunch of pictures off the internet, and then they basically resold them.
Ooh, I don't know about this.
It's one of the AI generator things where they were taking like all of these pictures and then saying, oh, look what I created, and they're stealing tons of people's private information. So with that, how I see, like, we post these beautiful birth stories, we post these beautiful birth pictures. Imagine a birth pool that just had a normal postpartum, like the placenta release, and there's just a small amount of blood at the bottom. You see this beautiful bonding moment. Somebody can take that picture and say, look at this horrible home birth. Hemorrhage everywhere. So we can take those pictures and say, look at how normal this is. Look at how beautiful this is. Look at how safe she is. And as long as we are louder than the other messages that are put out there, then our algorithm will get stronger. So it's really just letting us be that push, that momentum forward. And if we're all quiet and we don't talk about it, and this even goes for some of our mistakes, you know, we have to own it. Let's be transparent. And as long as we're transparent and the message is real, then we're going to be on top. But we have to give ourselves a chance to be there.
Yeah, it's the chance to be there. And the cool thing is everyone has a phone. Everyone has an internet connection. You can make a social media account for free. Turn it on. Like, that's the only thing that midwives are missing. Turn it on, hit record, and post it. And sure, if your sense of self-worth is determined by your likes and follows, like, it's going to be low in the beginning. And that doesn't matter. The point is to just keep creating, because when you continue consistently, the AI learning, the machine learning picks up on that. And that's that algorithm you were mentioning. And here's just a cheat sheet for those who are just beginning to get social media is, in short form, you got to post every day, twice a day is better. And in long form, you got to post once a week, three times a week is better. And just do it. Just send it out there. Just do it. And I think a lot of our challenges will reduce if we just accept the fact that we are the experts in this space. And that if we expect this space to continue, there needs to be people talking about this space, which is midwifery care, community-based care, normal birth, physiologic birth, et cetera, choose whatever platform and talk about it. Talk about it. You know, a lot of people are like, I don't understand why doulas have been so successful, because they talked about it. They're incredibly motivated and connected in terms of the message that is going out. What is a doula and what do we do for you? Anywhere, it would be the same. And I think, you know, that's part of the challenge of midwifery. We need to make that message consistent. But either way, get up, speak. I'm sort of preaching, but you guys know. Elkie's on there every day. I see you on your TikTok.
Not every day. But what I think is interesting is, you know, because I've been doing social media for a long time, and I was used to being the crazy wackadoodle home birth psychopath. You know, I was the weirdo, I'm dangerous. And so, but now there's all these free birthers that just are pooping all over the midwife. Midwives are there to ruin your birth. I think it's hilarious.
I'm like, I know. Oh my gosh, well, there's a bunch of OBs online now too. And they're also, you know, adding, it's very interesting. We're in a new, the influencer is here to stay, y'all. It's time to just be one.
Well, I think it's not as scary as it used to be, because it used to all be on Facebook, which was attached to your personal thing. And that's what people should know about, like, the great thing about TikTok or just having like a business account or whatever. It's not your, yeah, you don't feel so personally attracted if you just have this alias. But yeah, I think it's a lot less scary than it used to be. So if you've had bad experiences in the past, I think you may be pleasantly surprised.
And also
it's good to be controversial. That's the other tip, because before I would always avoid the controversial things because it would just end up a dumpster fire. But the other day I just did one on circumcision, and boy, that light up, and I got these great replies. Like this one, like what is it, critical care doctor saying, well, I think you're exaggerating, and I don't think la la la, but just like in such a respectful way. And it was just great to have dialogues with all different kinds of people. And so the controversial posts are, you know, don't be afraid to be controversial. And we by nature are controversial. So that's in our favor.
That's awesome.
I did a TikTok where I collect a whole bunch of antique midwifery items from the UK. And I did love a TikTok those. Where I use forceps, and I put like an exercise ball in a pelvis, and you know, and I made a full disclaimer, midwives don't use forceps, but back in the day during like the 1940s 50s they had to, because all the doctors were out, you know, in the war. and this is where they are. And so I like was using them, and I totally squished that ball, that head. And as I was like trying to pull it out of the pelvis, so many people were like, that's not how forceps are used. And I was like, really? Because I can tell you about six people that have dents in their heads that were probably used like this.
It's like, people are like horrified. Oh my God, that's hilarious. Love that.
Oh, make it controversial. That's, or, you know, just make fun of it. I had, through midwifery school, I had Tiffany. She was my skeleton. And because I went to school through part of COVID. And so I had this skeleton that I named Tiffany. She had her own personality. And, you know, it was just like, she was in so many of my videos. And I was like, oh, Tiffany's here. Come on over. And so, you know.
But that grows your following, that kind of curious, interesting, unusual you-ness is what is all about. So, like, don't try to fit in. Be 100% you. I love this. You guys are awesome. And we're going to link your socials so people can follow and get more ideas. I want to talk a little bit about ChatGPT before we finalize this convo. For those of you who don't know, ChatGPT is a machine learning AI that is generative. So you can ask for prompts. You can give it a prompt and ask for a response. In fact, there's a whole new industry starting, which is a prompt engineer to figure out how to write the right thing to get the thing that you want. And I used ChatGPT as a foundation in a course that I taught. It was a one-time course, and it's going to be turned into an online course sometime this summer. But I taught a class on PPPGs, which is protocols, policies, procedures, and guidelines for midwives. And I showed the midwives a specific prompt engineering process that they could go through in order to use it to draft their PPPGs for practice. And this is one of those uses of the new technologies that are coming down that I think is going to be game-changing. We all know that we need to have guidelines for practice. And we need those guidelines to be specific to us. And the idea of writing a 550-page document is overwhelming to practicing midwives. So instead, you can preload the ChatGPT algorithm with specifics about yourself. And then you can use this prompt engineer process to get a very significantly useful draft. They're all drafts, like you said before, Charlotte. Everything that you generate needs to be reviewed for you specifically. But the difference between editing a document versus fully creating a document is usually a magnitude difference in terms of your efficiency. And one of the things that I love to help midwives do is get better and better at efficiency so that they have more work-life balance and they're not feeling like they're drowning under the weight of all their responsibilities, birth being the very last one of them, you know, because running a business is its own thing. And I love using this. The other thing I love using ChatGPT for, and in my consulting, I recommend other midwives use it, is to help create the prompts for social media. So you can literally just put it in, like, give me 25 ideas for compelling content that would reach new parents speaking about breastfeeding. Give me 25 ideas for compelling content that I could use in social media for pregnant women considering midwifery care. These are literally the prompts you can put in. Some of them will be bogus. Some of them will look like word salad, but a few you could absolutely expound on. And the better you get at the prompt engineering, the better the content that you get. And that just takes using it and practicing it. What are you guys using ChatGPT for these days?
Just like what you said, I move up a little bit of a notch where I use Google Analytics.
Mm-hmm.
Keywords that are happening, search terms that are happening in my area and my region. What are the highest search terms? And then I will make the prompts work to those search terms. So
brilliant.
It's just kind of like people are Googling for this right now in my area. I'm going to put out media. I'm going to tag it in this location. And that way it'll start to get a little more traction.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
The big thing about chat is when you don't like what it's answering, ask it again. You don't have to rewrite the thing. Just be like,
yeah, no, just regenerate. Regenerate.
Like, yeah, or just like say, remove 1, 2, and 5. I want more of like this, or can you give me more detail on number three? It is to the point where you can ask it like expand, and you can get down to the grains of what it is. The one thing chat can lie. So
totally. And it's biased. It's 100% biased. So it's important to always know that. This is human fallacy. One of the things that I like to do is I like to feed it resources. So I'll say, according to Varney's, Miles, and Elizabeth Davis, what answer would you give for gestational diabetes testing in pregnancy? And they will then quote from those sources. They have a disclaimer on ChatGPT that you can't ask for anything within 2 years because they're that far behind in feeding it information. And you can't quote unquote trust the APA reference that it'll spit out. You still have to check the formatting, but it gets you a lot closer to what you want to be doing with it. What do you use it for, Upkeep?
Not very much, just smaller, like because Google is so terrible right now, I basically use it like Google.
Yeah.
Like, what are the symptoms of, if something I've forgotten or not sure, a disease I hadn't heard of, what are the symptoms of blah, 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 blah. And just instead of getting the same, because nowadays when you Google, you get the first 10 are like, well, no, or they're just like WebMD, Mayo Clinic, they're all of these, and they're all regurgitated. Like they all have the exact same
script.
And often it's fallacies or it's outdated. Google searches are worthless. Erroneous. So that's what I use it for.
Well, my tip for using ChatGPT that gives it such a better way of answering you is to tell it who it should be. So this is part of prompt engineering, but you could say, if you were the practice manager of a small community-based midwifery practice, what advice would you give? Da-da. Instead of just asking what advice would you give for a pregnant woman, you really tell it what you are. So I like practice manager. I like community-based midwife. It knows these terms. And I like community health worker. These will get you terminology and responses that match your tone, as opposed to this very hierarchical, male, patriarchal bullshit of medical terminology. So I like telling it who it's supposed to be when it answers the question, and then ask the question, and then you get a better response for sure. Well, this has been fascinating. Before we close up, anything else that you guys want to touch on for the tech episode? What do you think midwives want to know, or what questions are they asking? What do you wish people knew? What did you want to know before you get into it?
I think for me, the one thing that I'm starting to see a lot happen is kind of along the same way, Elkies, like the watches, the rings, the things that we're wearing that's collecting health data. Ask your clients what their information is telling them. Like, ask them hey, what did your oxygen saturation say it was last night? You know, like things that we don't think about. I'm starting to see some tie-ins to like postpartum preeclampsia, that maybe 2 days before that happened, she was like, yeah, my body temperature dipped a little bit. And I was like, interesting. So I'm going to start to kind of ask, especially when I see them walk in, or if they're a little more health conscious, especially if they did like cycle tracking with their data or with their technology, I'm going to be like, tell me what you're, you know, tell me what's going on with you this week. Tell me what's going on. What, anything new on your technology? Because I have a ton of tech people in my area. So
they
are all in love with their technology. And anytime we have any type of health blip, I'll be like, what does your devices say?
Yeah.
I don't have any idea, because that might not be on anybody's radar right now. But as a community-based healthcare provider, we have such a small clientele and intimate connection that we can start to make our own case studies.
Very cool.
That's how I'm like, let me have your data. I'm not going anywhere with it, I promise. But
yeah, very cool. Yeah, like Elsie said, share with your butt, like make it a sharing concept so you can see it. Yeah.
What were
you
saying? Yeah, I mean, a lot of those have the option. They're like set up for a health coach to have access, you know, to the data. So they're really set up for that if they're willing to share it with you. Yeah. Which it would be great, because then if you have more numbers, and ideally you could use AI to use all of your numbers and all, you know, well, anyway.
Well, if you de-identify it, technically you could.
Yeah. No, it'd be amazing. The other thing I would love someone to make or do, and, you know, hey, DM me, people, if you want to collaborate.
Collaborate. Yeah.
But right, and it would not be that hard. And actually, my son just graduated from school in computer science. So I'm getting him on this. Maybe, I don't know. But a bot. We need a bot that answers the questions, like basically what you're saying. According to Varney's or a community-based midwife, you know, how would you answer this question? But have it, I don't know how it works, but have it loaded like that. So you have a little midwife bot and say, you know, all the questions that you have to answer over and over and over again, and you're so sick of hearing yourself answer it. So if we have
lips in our mid colon, and it can be cultured with a swab of the vagina and anus, we do this between 30.
Those answers. If we had a vetted community birth midwife bot that we could build and people could subscribe to and have on here. Yeah, you're on.
I hear you.
We're gonna have to create our own data model. We need our own data model.
Let's
circle, and it will be biased. It will be midwifery biased.
Yes, yeah. That's what we want.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. I'm cheering for this. Well, before we close up, I have one question that I know our audience keeps saying, either consciously or subconsciously, and I want your answer to it. Do you think at any point in the far, far future that AI or technology will be able to replace midwifery?
No, absolutely not.
I think like the robotic arm, you know, robotic IV putter in her, you know, the IV insertion, I think, you know, the ancillary helper things could be replaceable. But no, I think we're in a pretty safe position as far as our profession, that it can't be outsourced. It can't go overseas. And of course, people are always going to want the human touch. And it kind of reminds me of that old Woody Allen movie. What was it? Sleeper. And so anybody who doesn't know that movie should go back and watch it. And it was predicting the future and that people would go into the orgasmatron to have sex. It was like a machine. And then the babies were, you know, created in a factory. And that I think people want the human touch. I think they
will
always.
With orgasms and birth.
And
okay,
with
got
midwifery,
it.
Yeah. They will always prefer the human touch.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure midwifery can ever be replaced, but I think huge parts of our profession could be. And I think, like you said at the very beginning, Charlotte, this comes back to who's driving this technology bus. That will determine a whole lot of our future. And so my call out there to anyone who does feel techie, who's listening to this podcast, is like, will you come drive the bus, please? Can you please put yourself out there as the influencer, the expert, the person that will help to craft this narrative and shift this technology in the favor of the birthing people who need that support and the midwives who could use that support? Yeah, that's my call. Thank you both for being here. What a fun and wide-ranging conversation. We hit it all today. What a pleasure. Where can people follow you, Charlotte, online?
My Instagram is midwife_CharlieB. And my TikTok is at ChuckCharles78.
Awesome. Elgie, where can we follow you?
Mine is Midwife Elgie Barnes. Everything. It's under one of the other. On Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I think it's Midwife Elgie. So kept it pretty simple.
Awesome. Well, of course, you can follow us on all the platforms, Midwifery Wisdom. And of course, this podcast, find wherever you listen to podcasts and on YouTube. Thanks for joining today. Thank you guys so much. Be well. Take good care of yourself.
Bye.
Bye, friend.
Bye.